Tuesday, February 18th, and we've got a full agenda. And we have a quorum. First up, we've got the University of Minnesota with their presentation, and President Cunningham is here to do the presentation. So come on up, Dr. Rebecca Cunningham. And start when you're ready and just say your name for the tape.
Well, thank you, Senator Housley, and members for the invitation to join the committee today. For the record, my name is Rebecca Cunningham, and I serve as the president of the University of Minnesota. I'm just delighted to be here today with a few members of my team on a really exciting U of M day at the Capitol with our students all over the building. Has just filled the air with their wonderful stories to discuss our capital investment today needs across our system. Since joining the university last July, I've spent time traveling across the state and visiting all five of our campuses, Crookston, Duluth, Morris, Rochester, and both parts of the Minneapolis and St. Paul Twin Cities campus. I've been so impressed by the fulfillment of our mission across the state and the student stories that we heard so loudly today. Yet I've also been struck by the condition of our physical infrastructure and the inadequate investment in asset maintenance. The buildings and facilities across our campuses are much more than just structures. They're the environments where innovation happens, where knowledge is shared, and where our students and communities participate in rich cultural activities. Our facilities must not only meet the demands of today, but be prepared for the challenges and opportunities of the future. Our students, faculty, staff, and visitors deserve to live, work, and learn within a physical environment worthy of our world-class reputation. We also must invest to keep our students here in our state, where students have so many choices today on where they pursue their education. Again, I appreciate your time today, and I look forward to working with you going forward. Vice President for University Services, Alice Roberts-Davis, will take over from here with the bulk of our presentation. Your colleagues on the Higher Education Committee have invited me to participate in their meeting almost simultaneously this afternoon, too, so I'm gonna join them at the conclusion of our presentation. Thank you again.
Thank you, President. Ms. Alice Roberts-Davis, go ahead. You guys heard that. Ms. Alice Davis Roberts, go ahead, and thank you, President Cunningham, and I know you have to run.
Thank you, President Cunningham, and thank you, Chair Housley and members of the committee. We appreciate the opportunity to be here today. Thank you for allowing us to come and talk about our 2025 state capital request. I'll just start by saying that we as Minnesotans are very fortunate to have a world-renowned major research university right here in our backyard. Our most recent economic impact report shows that the university supports more than 80,000 jobs, either directly or indirectly across the state, and that our impact on the economy is $11.5 billion annually. So we cannot take the university for granted, and there is a risk in not reinvesting in the physical plant. Our 2025 capital request includes just two items. First, HEPR remains our top priority. It's our main focus, our main source of funding for facilities for renewal and upkeep. Reinvestment extends the life and functionality of our assets and continues to be the most cost-effective approach. We have a long list of projects that we would tackle with $200 million, and many of these are critical projects that have already been on our list for several years at this point. Our second item is $20 million for the design of FARM, or the Future of Advanced Agriculture Research in Minnesota. This will create a real-world teaching, research, and outreach farm in southern Minnesota to help farmers and industry meet this crucial moment in sustainable food production. And I'll talk about that more shortly, but first, HEPR. The university's greatest capital need is regular, reliable funding dedicated to renewing existing buildings and infrastructure. We have old buildings, and we're seeing that old buildings are very good at creating new problems. The majority of our buildings are more than 50 years old, and at that age, things just naturally start to fall apart. Of our roughly 30 million square feet, almost 9 million, or one-third of our square footage, is now considered in poor or critical condition. That figure continues to inch up year over year. Buildings do decay at a fairly predictable rate, and this is just like your home. If there are needed repairs and maintenance, like windows or the furnace, you just have to invest in them if you plan to continue to live in your home. These problems don't go away on their own. They only get worse and more expensive to repair. University building assets are valued right at $15 billion. Our deferred maintenance backlog is nearly $6 billion. We need a regular and reliable source of funds to solve this challenge. Full funding of our $200 million HEPA request would fund over 100 projects in more than 75 buildings across the state. State bond funding is less predictable and more inconsistent than ever. There's also very little ability for us to predict either how much funding the university will receive or when we will receive funding. This financial volatility makes it very difficult for us to create accurate and meaningful multi-year plans. And certainly you can imagine that if we have large projects, we're not able to forecast funding, so we can't do them in phases easily. The funds we receive are most often a combination of asset preservation and new capital projects, so there's often little focus on reinvesting in existing assets. Historically, higher education was the largest recipient of state bond funding. Where higher education received as much as 50% of the bonding bill, today we receive about 10% of the bill when there is a bill, and that is shared between the university and Minn State. This chart illustrates the capital funding that is provided when the state issues bonds to fund construction and repair of state assets. These large capital appropriations from the state were responsible for constructing the majority of the buildings on our campus, and unfortunately, the need for regular renewal funding has not corresponded. There's been a steady decline in both the amount and predictability of funding. The cumulative impact of sustained underinvestment has resulted in a 10-year renewal need of $6 billion. With predictable funding plus increased efforts to consolidate space, we can and will start to reverse this trend. To be clear, our buildings are safe. Students and faculty are safe in our buildings. HEPA dollars are only allocated in specific categories, and so while you may see that many of them are labeled as life safety issues, we address any imminent risks of harm immediately. Figures and graphs are helpful, but it's equally, if not more important, to talk about the outcomes of your support of our 2025 request. I like to lead with safety and accessibility because these are things that are so fundamental to operating a campus that's welcoming for all students, faculty, staff, and visitors. Your full support of our $200 million request would mean an investment of over $40 million across 25 safety, code, and accessibility projects at all of our campuses. Projects like the Washington Avenue Pedestrian Bridge, where we desperately need to provide a safer railing option, to Moose Tower, a 19-story giant that needs extensive work to meet modern high-rise code standards, to a visitor cabin at Itasca, where the addition of an entrance ramp will enable visitors with limited mobility. Reliability comes next because we can't expect to maintain our status as a top research and teaching institution when we have consistent building failures. It's a fact that planned repairs are costly and less costly and less disruptive when we are unable to keep up. We have emergencies like power outages and building leaks that can displace a class or a researcher for hours or even days. Emergencies also tend to create cascading problems. For example, when a roof leaks or water gets inside, we're all of a sudden dealing with a host of issues like mold or critical mechanical or electrical systems being wet. Your support will help us replace the natural gas lines in Crookston, fix 50-year-old leaky pipes in Moose Tower, and completely overhaul the mechanical equipment in the Food Science Nutrition Building on the St. Paul campus. Last, your support will protect and extend the investments that the state has made in the past. As I noted earlier, more than half of our buildings are more than 50 years old, and many are far older. In fact, our oldest building, Eddy Hall, is just shy of 140 years. We had an opportunity to tour many of you legislators through Eddy Hall last year and some of our other historic buildings, and we hope that you can appreciate how special these are to the campus and the state, and also how critical it is for us to keep up with reinvestments so they can remain safe and functional for years to come. The photos at the top are at from the 1914 portion of McNeil Hall in St. Paul, where waiting too long led to a near miss when a large chunk of masonry peeled off from the ceiling and landed on a conference room table. We certainly want to avoid any sort of catastrophic events in our buildings. Finally, our students expect the facilities to reflect our world-class reputation. The buildings and equipment should be comparable to what graduates will encounter when they enter the workforce. They want facilities that mimic the places where they have learned and where they will continue to in their careers. We also have to recruit the top talent across the state. That means both faculty and staff. And in the state of Minnesota, we've done a fantastic job with our K-12 education. And often they come from beautiful facilities to the university and see that their high school facilities are actually superior to what it is we can provide at the university. For our second HEPA request, I'd like to talk about FARM. This is a $20 million ask from the state for design of this project. FARM aims to deliver practical solutions for today and forward-looking ideas for tomorrow using cutting-edge technology like predictive analytics, big data, robotics, and artificial intelligence. Educating students, industry partners, and Minnesota farmers on modern approaches to agriculture will ensure a continued talent pipeline in preparing Minnesota for our next generation of tech-savvy food and agricultural professionals. The university has already acquired over 1,300 acres of land in Maurer County for this project, and we are finalizing the pre-design at this point in time. State funding would be used to complete the remaining design work and get us ready for construction. This is a visionary project. It would be the first of its kind in the world. It would be an opportunity for us to study everything from soil health to how it affects our crops, to how those crops affect animals, how those animal proteins that we consume affect people, and then how people affect the environment around them, and then finally, the soil. So it's a full circle analysis and teaching and research around how farms work. We always like to end with this slide and just share that when we are given funding by the state, we put it to good use, and we're poised to do the same thing in 2025. Our track record has been to spend about 90% of the bill or the funding in the bill in less than 2 years. And as we reported in January, 85% of the 2023 appropriation has already been allocated to critical projects for renewal across our campuses. It's clear that capital investments are good for the university, they're good for local economies, and they have supported hundreds of vendors across the state with expenditures that go back to Minnesota companies. And so with that, I will stand for any questions that you may have, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Roberts-David. Members, any questions? Senator, Co-Chair Pappas.
It's me. President Cunningham, first I wanted to thank you so much for putting up that temporary fence on the Washington Bridge. As we spoke earlier this morning, members, the president told me that they were able to interfere and intercept in three potential suicides just because the fence created a barrier, and then they were able to get emergency personnel to assist those people that were having a mental health crisis. So thank you again for doing that. I know it's complicated because Hennepin County owns the bridge. Hennepin County, if you're out there, you need to put up a barrier on your bridge. We did that with the High Bridge in downtown St. Paul, or in a neighborhood in St. Paul that has prevented many suicides with that, the higher barrier. What was my second thing? Oh, I'm really excited about the chemistry building. It seems like we just looked at it. I looked at it during, I think, a Bach bonding tour, and then we appropriated the money in 23, and here you're ready to open it. So I'm real excited to have the committee come back and see the new chemistry building. So thank you. And then finally, I just want to say that I'm just really sorry. I'm just really sad that that we haven't had the capacity to really meet your $6 billion in deferred maintenance needs, even with, you know, $100 million, which we did years, decades ago. We were able to give the university $100 million. I know that that you haven't gone back that far in looking at bonding history. But we were when the University of Minnesota and Minnesota State got a third of the bonding bill, and you mentioned that. Yeah. So we just have so many needs out there. It's really hard to keep up with all the deferred maintenance that we have across the state. And I think it's not a good look for our state to have so much of these things that need attention. But thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Senator Pappas. Senator Johnson Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've said it before around highway projects and bridge projects, and thank you for your testimony. I just want to remind people that this bonding request is for money to be spent around the state, and to remind all of us that when we approve or dedicate $18 million, for example, up in Duluth, or $5 million around the state, we all know what goes into a building. So again, my mission is for us to stop thinking of this as just an arbitrary spend. What we are buying are knobs and ceiling panels and yards of dirt and plants for outside and steel and concrete and all those things. So as a bonus, we get buildings. But what bonding really does is, number one, continues to support the mission of the university, which is, of course, something I'm very excited about. It allows our students to compete at an international scale, but it also puts all this money into our local economy. So this is a great way for us to provide good union jobs. I've done a lot of work at the U, both as a faculty member, but also as a contractor. I tested all the concrete on the Tate Physics Building. That was pretty fun. But it is really fun to work on that side and to see the investments and the quality with which the university builds and invests in their infrastructure. It is so important. And Senator Pappas, as an aside, we provided the inspection on the Washington Avenue Bridge when it was being retrofitted for the Central Corridor. And during that summer, three people jumped from that bridge while we were on site. And I remember talking to the security guards. You know, I teach there. I didn't know that was even an issue because, of course, we keep it quiet. But just the shock that was happening right in our own neighborhood. I was actually there when somebody jumped off the Washington Avenue ramp, too. So I think we are smart to know that students have this a mental health issue, and whether it's students or just anybody who finds the bridge, I too applaud your investment in that fencing. I was just teaching in Brunix the other day, and I walked by. It is really ugly, and so we need to invest in that. So thanks for bringing it up. Thank you for your commitment to protecting our students and to your commitment on investing in all of our University of Minnesota projects, and I will work hard for this, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Senator Johnson Stewart. Senator Dibble.
Well, at the risk of, I'll be the hat trick here. We'll mention the Washington Avenue Bridge a third time. thank you, Vice President Roberts David. We've had a number of conversations about that, so I appreciate your advocacy and leadership on the matter. President, I know that you've been involved, although we haven't met or spoken yet, but pleasure to meet you, and nice to know that you've been advocating on this as well. And of course, we've spoken with former Senator Lopez Franzen on the subject. We had to overcome a little bit of a little kerfuffle trying to get those temporary barriers up, but we got it done. And prior to that happening, I was glad to hear, I learned today from Senator Pappas that it's had some positive effect in individuals' lives. Unfortunately, before we got those temporary barriers off, we missed the opportunity, not just for Kayla, of course, we have the handout here, but for a number of students who have followed suit. So it's important to get the permanent barriers up. We're working in our committee. I don't know if you know that yet. Some creative ideas that we might be able to employ to get some of that funding. My ask of you, though, is, as you're walking around this building, lobbying on the HEPR requests and, talking about all the good things that you're talking about, the investment in our state's economy and the vitality of people's, of Minnesotans' lives that come to us through the University of Minnesota. I think this chart is very telling, by the way. I think you need to tell this story, the declining commitment of the state to the major land-grant university that we have, to please also talk about the Washington Avenue Bridge, because these things don't happen by magic. We have to persuade 200 other people in both chambers, as well as another individual across the street. So just please just keep talking about that to create the political context and conditions so that we can fund, you know, relatively minor amount of money, but it'll make a big difference on that bridge. But also just continue to tell the story about the importance of the larger investments in the University of Minnesota and how the capital program, the capital assets, play a role in that. I think some of these numbers are kind of bracing, the level of deterioration, because it feels like we give hundreds, tens and hundreds of millions of dollars, but the enterprise is quite large, and the level of deterioration is kind of surprising. I think people will be interested to hear that. Finally, the Crookston campus, Senator Lopez Franzen and Senator Pappas and I have taken an interest in that when they said they were just going to replace it with like for like, and it's like, wait a minute, you know, we're not going to replace it with emerging technology and green energy, and I'm glad to see we've kind of turned the corner on that. We're not going to just be replacing that system with what was there before, but we're looking to the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. I have one quick question. Can you help me understand, how do you prioritize your HEPR dollars across your campuses so all of the statewide, each campus gets some? How do you prioritize it?
Chair Housley, there are a few different ways we look at how we prioritize HEPR projects. First, we go through and we do a facility condition assessment that happens each decade on all of the campuses, and that assigns a like-for-like value to all of the components of the building. The buildings then receive a score based on the condition of it, and we use that as the first pass for how we look at buildings, whether they're in good, fair, poor, or critical condition. Once we've gotten those assessments done, we work directly with the campus facilities folks to talk about what are those emerging projects, the ones that absolutely need to be looked at first, and then we go through a whole process for prioritizing the projects in that way. We also use the square footage and the condition of the building to come up with the calculation for how whatever funding we receive is distributed across all of the campuses. And so obviously the Twin Cities with the most gross square footage gets the largest share, and then it goes down from there for the other campuses just based on the age, condition, and square footage on those campuses.
Got it. Senator Pappas. Oh, President Cunningham.
If I may add, Chair Housley, so I think it might also be helpful if I might give examples of the things that I think about across the five campuses that we have right now that really come to mind, because as Vice President Roberts said, we do make sure that we're prioritizing improvements on every campus, and that's really important. At Crookston, the image that comes to mind is the heating plant that needs to be updated. Heat, I've learned visiting Crookston in the winter, is rather important there, and we need to have our students not have to worry about both the variability of the heat as well as the extra costs that are incurred when that heating is going out. On the Morris campus, we have a building where many of our students gather for clubs and for activities that is not accessible to our students with limited mobility at all. In Duluth, these funds would go directly to improve a library so that it could be used for an improved sales curriculum that many of our students would be able to then use, really expanding their opportunities. And on the Twin Cities campus here and on the St. Paul campus, I was just had an example come to light over lunch, which I've known about before, but the two folks that I talked to, the two faculty, really brought it to light for me. They both work in the St. Paul Food and Science Center, and first of all, we used to be number one in our food and science research here at the university. The facilities that they're working in now, which I have had a chance to tour, has deteriorated substantially to where there are leaks, they can't plug in things properly, where we're not able to take industry funds that are coming in now to be able to work in those facilities, because the industry is not going to bring them to a place that doesn't have the most updated facilities. And what else that means is, as they've tried to recruit faculty to work there, they walk them around and they say, this isn't anywhere near what my working conditions would be in somewhere else. And the graduate students also. So we're losing faculty, we're losing people, and we're not able to then partner with the industry locally that we would able to do as well. And that has brought our rankings there down to sort of middle of the pack. We have an opportunity to really improve that in the region we're in with the food and science business we have here, but we can't do that without more investment. I could comment just also, I want to thank the committee for their kind words on the bridge. The safety of our students will always be at the forefront and needed. And although we do not own the bridge, we did make substantial investments this fall because we simply can't tolerate not having a safe environment for our students, and regardless of the investments and the costs that were needed. So thank you again for the opportunity to address those questions.
Thank you, President Cunningham. Senator Pappas.
President Cunningham, I think one of the issues that I've noticed in the past is the legislature will only have so much money it could do for the university. And as much as we want to do HEPR, the university has also come forward with new construction projects. For example, the chemistry building was $90 million. And I totally get it. You've got a lot of old buildings, and some of them just need to be torn down or a complete renovation that now is not a HEPR project anymore. It's more extensive than that. So, but that's the internal competition, is every time you bring a project to us, we think, well, then we have to do less for HEPR. It's not that we can do that project on top of HEPR. And that's why in last year's bill, we didn't fund the ag project. We just did HEPR. And it wasn't enough even for that. So that's kind of our challenge too as a committee. And I certainly want to work with you on that about, what should the priority be?
Chair Pappas, if I may speak to a little bit to that. We need to have both priorities, and obviously that might not mean we can fund both of them at all the levels, but we do need to both repair our buildings as well as invest in new facilities and new research equipment and new buildings. And the reason for that actually is something that's come to light a lot in the past week around our indirect cost rate. We have the lowest indirect cost rate actually in the Big Ten, and what that means, as sort of has become more public this week, is that we bring federal dollars for research to the university, and with that we get overhead dollars that come along with it. However, our indirect cost rate has been going down, partly because we have not invested in our facilities. So with that, we're leaving about $60 or $70 million of federal dollars on the table over the next 4 or 5 years, because our indirect cost rate is actually going down because we're not investing in new buildings. So where our peer universities are investing in, are not only repairing buildings, but are also investing in new facilities, their indirect cost rates have increased and are substantially more than ours. So they're able to bring, for every dollar their researchers get to the state, they're able to bring 60 or 70 or 75 cents on the dollar. We are able to bring less and less, which then again doesn't give us that outside source of federal funding for which to bring the university to its best possible light. So we unfortunately have to do some of both. Yeah.
Thank you, President Cunningham. Members, any more questions? Nope. Oh, Senator Johnson Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is for both of you. Do you think your alumni, I'm an alum, lots of us are, and by the way, thanks for those awesome pins. Do you think your alums are fully aware of how important bonding is? I know my husband and I have endowed a scholarship. When I was director of construction management, I worked regularly with the development office. I see our boards work very closely for private donations and for individuals. But I have to say, in all my years at the U, I have never once heard about how bonding might be useful and how it fits in the overall mission. And first off, yes or no, do you agree that your alums are aware of bonding?
President Cunningham.
Senator I believe our alumni and donors generally across the country in higher education do focus more on new buildings, and it is often more of a stretch to get donors and alumni interested in giving their personal funds towards, you know, things like mechanical repairs of a heating element. I think we've been working, and I know our Alumni Association is here, certainly with our Alumni Association to help them understand the extent of our bonding needs and requests. So I hope that answers your question. I'm sure we could do more.
Well, actually,
Johnson Stewart.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. That's my point. That is, in fact, my point. I know that in my entire history, supporters and alums are asked, in fact, to support scholarship and students, and all that is extremely important. I'm just challenging us and you to think of ways that we might make our alums and our supporters more aware of how not having more capital investment, whether it comes from the state or from who else, really impacts our growth and our opportunities. I mean, in fact, faculty will go to the best place, faculty and grad students both. And with faculty come grants, et cetera, you know how that works. But I guess I would just challenge us to think about that, how we might get the alumni more interested in what bonding is and what that means. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for the presentation. There's a couple things I'd like to get more information on. You might not have it today, and if not, you're just welcome to send it to me. One has to do with the lowest in the nation indirect costs. I would like to see the data on that. We have one research institution, or one research university in this state, and I think it's imperative that we can allow a great research at our university. So I want to know about the specifics of how that is that we have the lowest indirect cost rate in the nation, and I would hope that is not a function of the quality of research. I just want clarity on that, and if you can also send me the data on that. And then the other item has to do with really always, one of the things we do, we often look at other states and see how are other states funding their research universities, or how are they funding their universities and colleges. And one of the things that I noted throughout the years is some of our neighboring states, they do not fund buildings through the state as far as HEPR requests. In other words, my understanding is other universities, I don't know how they fund those, maintenance, those HEPR, those ongoing expenses. But I think that's something to look at. Maybe that's something that our researchers could, we should get a better view, I think, of how other states also are funding their universities, both the needed bonding requests for things like great research labs, for example, and also how they're funding those, what we call HEPR requests in Minnesota. And when I was at another university and asked this question because they were speaking of us, I said, well, how do you fund these things then if your state government is not funding them? And to Senator Johnson Stewart's comments, the comments that came back to me were, well, these are through our alumni. We have alumni foundations that are funding these requests. So I do think that's something to look at also. Maybe the university has this information, how our alumni contributions in total compare in some way with other states. So I think it's important that we look at all of these possible reasons why we are seemingly at a disadvantage in Minnesota with our only our only research university.
President Cunningham.
Chair and Senator, I'd be happy to address some of those questions and then send you more information. I want to make sure I speak clearly, not the lowest in the nation, the lowest in the Big Ten. So across our Big Ten peers, and if it's not the lowest, it's like the second lowest, but we will definitely get you that information on the one piece. I think Our foundation does a quite wonderful job in raising funds. I think the latest data that has come out is actually that among the Big Ten, they're the top third in raising funds for their university. So I think they do a quite wonderful job of that. We have generally prioritized those funds going to scholarships to keep tuitions down. So we should just be aware if we shift the dollars away from the funding for scholarships and student support more towards buildings, then that would leave more on the burden of our students to pay for tuition, et cetera. So that's another component there. But I'm happy. We all need to explore all the opportunities that we have for funding. I think one of the other issues I noticed coming in here is because that graph put up has been over many years of disinvestment. There's, there's quite a bit of work to do there. So no single year of good fundraising is going to be able to address the kind of backlog that we have. So I'm hoping for a continued partnership. I understand there's difficult times. Thank you. Was that all your questions? I think it was all.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Also, just in the information that might be coming, I think it'd be interesting to know, too, our enrollment over the last few years and how that compares to perhaps, I don't know how you would even get a grip on, you know, the square footage or the amount of infrastructure that we have, but I think those are important pieces of information to have, too, as we puzzle this out.
President Cunningham.
Chair and Senator Nelson, our enrollment this year is at an all-time high of 70,000 students. So we have a lot of students that are experiencing our current infrastructure. That will impact them in an assortment of ways that may or may not set them up best. Either to stay here or to want to invest later on when they finish their time. We know that the students that come to the university stay at the university, stay in the state overwhelmingly 60 to 70%. We know as a state we're losing about 9,000 students every year out of state that are choosing not just to come not to the university but to not come to our state in general. And when they do that, they're not likely to come back. And I have an 18-year-old now, and many of you have helped children and teens go through a college process. It does matter when they're looking at the facilities where they think what kind of experience they're going to get, and also that they can have heat in a library that doesn't leak is really important. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I have one quick question, President Cunningham. Of those 70,000 students, are they all back live and in person, or are some of those online still? I don't sit on higher ed, so sure. I don't know how many are.
The vast majority of our experience is a residential experience. We certainly offer some courses hybrid, but the vast majority of our experience is residential. And what we've learned through COVID is that's a really good experience for students that in a challenging mental health time. We talked about the Bridge and other that students of that age particularly really need to be around their peers, and they do well when they can live and learn close to their peers. We certainly offer hybrid opportunities, and there are some online opportunities and some programs. You know, we obviously have a very great program at Crookston that has many online students. So, but overwhelmingly, our students are getting a residential experience for which gives them the choice that they want and also the mental health benefits that they need during this time. I apologize. I'm told that I'm requested in the other hearing, so to respect that committee. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, President Cunningham, and thank you, Vice President Roberts David. Thank you. Good luck in your other committee. Thank you. Next up, we have Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Come on up, Chancellor Olson, Vice Chancellor Swanson, and Karen Hewitt. Go ahead when you're ready and introduce yourself for the tape.
Chair Housley, Chair Pappas, members of the committee, my name is Scott Olson. I have the honor to to serve as the Chancellor of the Minnesota State College and University System. Today, with my colleagues Brian Swanson and Karen Hewitt, we'll provide an overview of the bonding proposal that sits before you for your consideration. I've been around a while. This is my second year as Chancellor, but before that, I was 11 years the president of Winona State University in Winona and Rochester, and before that was 9 years at MSU Mankato. So I've been around long enough to attest to the growing need on our campuses for the kind of investment that we're asking you to make. Last year, like you, I did a tour of all of the projects that were being proposed by Minnesota State. And by the way, thank you so much for your commitment to tour around the state and see the projects the U of M is proposing, the projects we're proposing. That means a lot to us and our campuses that you take the time to do that and come learn about us. So we are so grateful for that. I saw firsthand those infrastructure needs, as you did, and they're real. And the impact that declining facilities is having on our students is palpable. The age of the buildings on our campuses impact our operating budget, because they're getting harder and harder to maintain. And as you've seen firsthand, those needs are very pressing. So, Madam Chair, we are committed first and foremost to taking care of what we already have. That's why our number one request is a HEPR request, $200 million. And we're grateful to Governor Walz that he's recommending $102.9 million for us for HEPR. And like the University of Minnesota, like what you just heard, this need is just growing and growing and growing. And so we stand with our siblings at the University of Minnesota in underlining that need for HEPR. Minnesota State has 364 buildings that are over 50 years old. That represents 40% of our buildings and 60% of our square footage. And this is consistent, Chair Pappas, with what you were asking about, which is kind of the lingering effect of all that stuff compounding over time. We've fallen far behind in keeping up with deferred maintenance. That's why we're asking for an additional $25 million in repair and replacement in our operating budget request. To serve our students and prepare Minnesota's future workforce, our colleges and universities need to be able to rely on a consistent source of revenue to repair leaky roofs, broken HVAC systems, and crumbling sidewalks. So I'd like to briefly mention the process we use. It's pretty sophisticated. We have 33 colleges and universities on 54 campuses, and they all have needs. And so they submit their proposals through a process, and then those are evaluated by others in our system, can't vote on your own project, in teams to rank them. And then what you see as a bonding list coming forward is the ranked result of that long, sophisticated process we go through after our Board of Trustees has reviewed and blessed that list. So that's what you're looking at. And sometimes you get to enjoy the fruits of your labor. Senator Dibble, thank you so much for coming to the ribbon cutting at Minneapolis College with Metro State, that fantastic new facility. So thank you, Senate, for funding that. And thank you, Senator Dibble, for being there to get to enjoy that a little bit as we introduce that to the city of Minneapolis. So Chair Housley and Chair Pappas, with your permission, I'd like to turn the rest of the presentation over to our Associate Vice Chancellor, Brian Swanson.
Thank you, Chancellor Olson. Vice Chancellor Swanson.
Good afternoon. My name is Brian Swanson. I'm the Associate Vice Chancellor for facilities, and although we're here to talk about bonding, I would be remiss if I didn't follow on the Chancellor's plug for two of our operating budget proposals. We have one for $25 million non-recurring for demolition, and a second for $50 million non-recurring for repair and replacement. The repair and replacement you can think of as the operating budget equivalent of HEPR. We can't fund demolition with bonding dollars, so that $25 million in the operating budget for demolition is probably the best money you could possibly give us. I can also say that we could spend twice that amount of money on demolition if you felt so inclined to give us more than $25 million, so you don't have to worry about giving us too much money in that category. For those of you not familiar with Minnesota State, I'm relatively new, so I find this fascinating. We're the fourth largest higher education system in the United States behind the State University of New York, the City University of New York, and the University System of Georgia. Minnesota State is an open access system. We welcome anyone and everyone with a high school degree or its equivalent. That means we serve 38,600 first-generation students, 56,000 low-income students, and almost 7,000 veterans. We educate about two-thirds of Minnesotans pursuing undergraduate credentials, as well as provide numerous workforce-oriented non-credit certification programs. This diversity of academic programs makes for an amazingly rich but crazily complicated set of facility requirements. Our facilities support programs for landscapers, electricians, welders, surgery technicians, gunsmiths, accountants, computer scientists, artists, engineers, and nurses from International Falls to Albert Lea. Minnesota has a history of serving students and the employers that hire them by making higher education convenient and available to everybody. The state universities, which are originally the teachers' colleges, the community colleges and the technical colleges grew up as three completely separate and uncoordinated systems. The technical colleges didn't even start out as being the state. They were built and operated by the local school districts. Higher education within 50 miles of everyone in Minnesota was the goal in the 1960s. And the outcome of this goal of making higher education available locally has been what you see on this map. 28.5 million square feet of space, over 843 structures on 54 campuses. We've got a little bit of everything everywhere. The challenge we face, not dissimilar from the university, at its core is a math problem. Our expenses are growing faster than our resources. We've stopped adding square footage and are actually trying to get rid of space, but what we have keeps getting older. As anyone who owns a house or a cabin knows, you can only get so many years, no matter how much maintenance you do, out of your roof, your furnace, your carpet. Eventually, it's just worn out. Roofs, unfortunately, don't magically fix themselves, and they never get cheaper. Buildings decay at a fairly predictable rate. You can see our backlog of deferred renewal growing at a very steady rate because the amount of funding we have to invest in fixing up these buildings continues to go down in actual and inflation-adjusted dollars. That statewide network of higher education facilities that I just spoke about was largely built and funded by the legislature. Historically, the renewal and renovation of these buildings was also funded by the bonding process. The state operating funds and the tuition, which are really the only other source of funding available, paid for the operating costs for these facilities, the maintenance, the custodial, and the utilities. So as a system, we set aside or ask each campus to set aside about $1 a square foot for repair and replacement funding out of their operating budget. And that number has not changed over time as budgets have continued to get pinched. But when you think about the fact that even a moderate renovation today for a technically oriented space could cost you $500 a square foot, that means your dollar a square foot from your operating budget really only gets around to fixing something every 500 years. The best roof in the world's only going to last you maybe 40. So these state funds and tuition, which have not kept pace with inflation, they're not sufficient to fill that capital funding gap without decimating the very programs that bring in the tuition and then provide the graduates to the employers. So if you take the money from the operating budget for the buildings, you got to cut the programs. The programs will provide the tuition. You're stuck in a catch-22. When expenses go up but revenue continues to come down, the outcome has been buildings get in worse. They move to worse and worse condition. So what do we know? Minnesota State colleges and universities are honestly overbuilt for current and foreseeable needs. The reduced state investment, rising inflation, tougher building codes, sustainability codes, they hamper our ability to keep up with deferred maintenance. There's insufficient resources, both capital and operating, to properly maintain and sustain the campus facilities. We need different space and better space, but we do not need more space. What we do need is your help in replacing, modernizing, and demolishing buildings. At its core, this request is about providing some pretty basic facilities to serve the students that make up Minnesota's current and future workforce across the state. We're looking to ensure competitive, modern, convenient, and safe learning spaces. These learning spaces include classrooms, laboratories, shops, studios, academic support, and student gathering spaces. And we're looking to achieve this not with a lot of fancy new buildings, but with a mix of renewal, replacement, renovation, and demolition. Our 2025 request continues Minnesota's state no net new growth approach. Since 2020, we have kept the growth of our academic spaces flat. We're actually hoping with your help to demolish buildings and bring that space total down. The $25 million in the operating budget will target 16 buildings and 500,000 square feet of space, but we've identified 1.3 million square feet of space that we could get rid of if we had enough money. HEPR is our number one priority. We have 65 projects across the system that will address critical needs at each institution. We also have 14 major projects, all of which you've seen before. These are all renovation or replacement projects, and five of these you previously funded for design. HEPR, you heard the story from the university. It's the same stuff. And with us, this is a legislative creative program set up in the 90s. It's got very strict rules about how we can spend it. It's the most important bond funding you give us. It's also the first that gets cut in the bill development. And as you can see from the pictures, these are not glamorous projects, but they are very important. The funding renews building envelopes, replaces plumbing, electrical, heating, cooling, ventilation systems, resolves building codes, accessibility deficiencies, improves energy efficiency, and upgrades utility infrastructure. Making these kind of improvements early makes the buildings last longer and reduces the need for whole buildings to be replaced. If HEPR allows us to do lots and lots of smaller improvements across the system, it's the line item projects, the appropriation projects, that really allow us to tackle the larger and more complicated challenges. We have our 2024 bonding book. I think that was provided to you. It's the 2024 book, even though it's 2025. We saved some money and we just stapled the new cost estimates to the cover rather than reprint the whole book. So that helps. Every little bit helps. And in 2023, you funded five projects for design totaling $17.3 million. These projects have been moving through their schematic design and they're now looking for construction funding. And after HEPR, these would be our priority for construction funding. And then we focused today on HEPR and the five projects. But if you had extra money and you wanted to continue shopping, we have lots of other great projects on our list for you to consider. And we're happy to talk in great detail about any of these as well. So I went quickly, but thank you for your time and consideration. And I don't know if you have anything you want to add at the end.
Thank you, Vice Chancellor and Chancellor. And on behalf of Senator Pappas and myself and the committee, we want to thank you when we came out to the various locations for serving us lunch and dinner. So thank you. Member Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question. It's a little off topic, but I think probably the two of you are the best to answer it. You know, you talked about how, you know, there's a glut of space, but it's how are we going to use the space to best meet the needs of students, workforce. And so I have one question regarding that. Are any of these projects, one of the things that has come to my attention is that we just have such a shortage of dental hygienists and dental assistants. And that really is right in the wheelhouse, I think, of Minnesota State colleges and universities. And I'm just curious if any of the projects that you are looking at for this particular bonding cycle. It seems like I know there's a cost to repurpose that space into what's needed now, and I know sometimes these things that have to do with patients are very expensive as far as equipment. Are there any plans in your proposal to retrofit or reuse some of the space that is not necessarily needed in its current state but could be helpful in helping with a workforce shortage, like dental hygienists, for example?
Senator Nelson, that's funny. We just had that conversation in jobs yesterday. You were there, weren't you?
I was there.
Yeah, you were there. Chancellor Olson.
Chair Housley, Senator Nelson, there is space that we're able to repurpose for other things. I couldn't tell you which campuses are currently thinking about expanding or adding a dental assistant or dental hygiene program. I would put in a plug for the amazing one at RCTC that you're familiar with, which is terrific because it brings in all the social determinants of health, not just dental. So it's got the other pieces there too. We're always looking at that and always kind of reshuffling what the needs are. We were just up at M State, Senator Rasmussen, and they had recently renovated some health facilities on the Moorhead campus of M State, and one of that was for dental hygiene. So we're always doing that, but my colleagues here are, I think, looking up where dental hygiene might be sprouting. I don't know.
Great. Vice Chancellor.
Madam Chair, Senator, we have one that's not on the list, and I know Normandale is investing some of their own campus funding in a science renovation project.
Thank you.
And then we also have on the bonding list Anoka Ramsey and South Central include a health sciences component, and our recollection is that those include dental hygiene. So there's nursing through and a number of healthcare programs scattered throughout the request. I think dental hygiene is in those two, Anoka Ramsey and South Central, but we can get back to you on that.
Thank you. Just one,
Senator Nelson.
Final comment. Thank you for the comments on RCTC. That is correct. The challenge is they're turning away more students than they can accept. These are students who want to be dental hygienists. They have dentists who need them. We have dentists who can't even fulfill their full day because they don't have enough dental hygienists. So I'm just saying more power to that. Really that laser focus on where the job needs are. And I really look at our RCTCs, our other community colleges, to really fill that need. You're the folks to do that. So thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, due to the power of text messaging and the internet, we also have learned that there's two under construction right now. In addition to Normandale, Century College and Brainerd are renovating dental hygiene programs right now.
Yay, Century. Thank you. Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Madam Chairs or co-chairs. I just want to echo the thank you for what you guys do while we're on bonding tours. A lot of times we end up at your facilities late in the afternoon or evening and we're tired, and you always provide such great hospitality. So thank you again to Chancellor Olson, Vice Chancellor Swanson, and a man, Mr. Oman, who's sitting back there as well, who also makes sure we have great tours of facilities. And I just can't stress the amount of how important these campuses are to greater Minnesota. Training our workforce, obviously a lot of parents want their kids to go to college, and it all sounds great, but to a four-year degree. But some of these technical trainings are so important to our communities. My district, District 19, has a lot of industrial people and a lot of training that goes on to help support those facilities. So again, I want to say hats off to you guys and really understand you guys have it down to what we think is important. The HEPR is very important as well. But really to have the flexibility to change your campuses over to what the current needs are of our industries across there, and one additional one on the hygiene. I think Mankato has a fantastic program down there that supplies a lot of people to at least my district in District 19, and probably as well as Carla's. But again, thank you. Can't overstate the importance of what the colleges, what NINSCU system does for our people in greater Minnesota. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Chancellor Olson.
Chair Housley, Senator Jasinski, I know some of those late night dinners ended up at Signatures and in Winona, and I'm sorry for the loss of your brother, Senator Kierlin, who just passed, and we should try to find a way to keep those dinners at Signatures going in the future.
Thank you. Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chancellor, and your team for being here today. I guess you have a lot of assets. You have a lot of square footage across the state, and I'd be curious, I mean, even just on like a square footage base, your real estate compared to the rest of the state of Minnesota in terms of the agencies we have. And the one thing I would encourage folks to do, especially as we're looking at HEPR requests, and then I'm also looking at the priority list that's been presented to us, is think about where we're going to get the highest return on investment, and maybe not just who's been on the list the longest. There was a report that I talked about in this committee a couple years ago that took the programs that were at public higher education institutions and rated them based off of return on investment. And it's basically looking at how much public dollars and private dollars, oftentimes from students, is going into an educational program, and what is the increase in their earning potential once completing that program. And if you looked at the high performers within the Minnesota State system, you saw Pine Technical, you saw Alexandria Technical and their transportation program, you saw some of these places that can take people with a relatively low dollar amount in terms of tuition investment, public investment, and help them get into life-changing careers that improve their economic outlooks and that of their family for potentially generations to come. And I know when I've talked with the folks at Alexandria Technical and Pine Technical, thinking about those investments and the wait lists and the demand that they have there on their campus, I think can really unlock a lot of potential. And then the flip side of that is that looking at programs that sometimes, people can go in and accumulate a lot of debt, they're expensive to run, enrollment's low, and it doesn't really enhance the economic outlook for that individual or that of the state in as meaningful a way. And it's not to say that work isn't important, but just as we're facing tough trade-offs as a committee and as you're effectively trying to allocate capital across the system, I think there needs to be some greater prioritization and looking at those programs that are really delivering for Minnesotans and those that are perhaps underperforming, what that expectation would be. And so we'd love to see, as we continue through session, just looking at, what is the return on investment metric that you're using to evaluate this list? And maybe even if something's been on there for a while and they've been in the queue and they've been waiting, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's the right investment for the state of Minnesota today. And so that would just be some feedback. I think, the institutions in the area I represent have been doing a great job of trying to think about the future and investing towards that. But it would just be something I'd ask you guys to take a look at.
Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Chancellor and Vice Chancellor. I feel like we have the same issue with Minnesota State that I mentioned with the University of Minnesota, is that there's this internal competition between how much we put into HEPR and how much we do with new construction or renovation, new projects. I just noticed in 23 there was some renovation, but there are also some design for new buildings. And, I think there's only so much money that, especially in a 790 bill, that we can do for higher ed, unfortunately, and I would like it to be more. You think I have control over that, right? I don't. And so what do we do, And that's the problem, is there's just not enough money. And it really, your chart about the growth and deferred maintenance over the last 10 years is pretty shocking. And how we just haven't been able to keep up with that. I don't know what the solution is, but something, there just is not the capacity in these smaller bonding bills and skipping years to be able to, we should have a bonding bill every year, and it should be substantial enough that we can kind of keep up with the deferred maintenance for higher ed and state agencies. And then we have this growing problem in rural Minnesota with water and sewer issues. That's dire, and that these small local communities need help and can't afford to do it on their own. So with that depressing note, I'll end my comments.
Thank you, Senator Pappas. Oh, Chancellor Olson.
Well, Chair Housley, Chair Pappas, that's an exactly right definition of the problem. And we find ourselves, you heard Associate Vice Chancellor Swanson talking about shrinking our footprint as part of that, so that there would be less deferred maintenance in the future. We even need your help in shrinking our footprint. Some of the buildings just have to be mothballed. Some need to be torn down. Some absolutely can be fixed. But if we're talking about some of those careers of the future, things that Senator Nelson and Senator Rasmussen were talking about, they, in some cases, required very different kinds of facilities than we might have built 60 years ago. And with energy needs and technology needs that are quite different. And so there's always going to be that need, not only to fix, tear down, or mothball, but sometimes to add something new in order for us to deliver that ROI to Minnesota's taxpayers, that they're getting the workforce they need.
Thank you. Any other questions? Oh, Senator Kruen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for coming and presenting this. To Senator Rasmussen's point about, you know, maybe looking at overperforming programs, I think that that is important and something that should be done. Also, I think I would add to that, looking at programs that serve maybe shortages in our state and what our state needs the most, kind of the most desperately needed fields, I think that would be something to prioritize as well. But then I also just wanted to mention that this is my first year here on the Capital Investment Committee, and you have good lobbying for bonding, because I've already been to Anoka-Ramsey Community College twice. I've only been in the legislature now on my third year, first year on the Capital Investments, and I've toured the need that's number 13 on here twice already. And I think it was the previous presentation talking about how some of these facilities aren't even keeping up with what high schools have, and I think that would be the chemistry lab that I noticed coming off the school board at Spring Lake Park, where, you know, prior to being in the Senate, our chemistry lab was significantly more modern, I think, than Anoka-Ramsey Community Colleges. So I can understand why this is on the list and why it's a need. And you know, and I enjoyed visiting with the president there, Kent Hansen, and one of my constituents who's a chemistry professor there, which is probably why I was out there twice. She was very insistent that I come out and look at it. So just processing all these, kind of taking the comments that Senator Rasmussen said, thinking through this myself, and just kind of wanted to lay that out there for you and also compliment you on your advocacy. Thanks.
Chancellor.
Chair Housley, Senator Kroon. If you want to really be depressed about the gap between some of our higher ed institutions and a high school, you need only visit the high school, I believe, in Senator Jasinski's district and see what a high school can be. It's a remarkable thing. And yes, there is a growing gap between what some high schools are able to do and what we're able to do, and we'd like to close that gap.
Thank you. No further questions. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you so much.
All right, yep, we'll see you later. Next up, we have the Minnesota Department of Education. Assistant Commissioner Bobby Burnham and Assistant Director of Government Relations.
Madam Chair, good afternoon, committee members. For the record, my name is Bobby Burnham, and I serve as Assistant Commissioner over the Office of Teaching and Learning at the Department of Education, of which the state library system is in the Office of Teaching and Learning. Today, we're here to talk about the governor's proposal for the library construction grant program. Can you see the slide deck yet?
We can't see it yet, but we all have it in front of us, so maybe staff can work to get it, and you can just continue. Do you have it too?
Yeah, we're just getting it plugged in. Madam Chair, should I go ahead and?
Yeah, just go ahead.
I first wanted to start off with just providing some recent data on library usage. There are 12 regional public library systems and 359 public library locations across the state, 8 bookmobiles, and at least one public library in every county. The latest data we have is on the 2023 usage. We had 15.4 million visits to the libraries in 2023. That's more than 8 times the attendance at the Minnesota State Fair. 56 million items were borrowed, and there were over 135,000 community meetings and public events that took place in the library system. The library system directors report a surge in patrons wanting to borrow materials, attend in-person meetings, and access technology in person. The 34,000 in-person children and young adults attended programming in 2023, and many library system directors are reporting a demand for meeting spaces that are spaces that are used for telehealth meetings and the need to update meeting rooms with adequate soundproofing and privacy measures is high, as are the needs for improving the air handling and HVAC systems. The eligible applicants for the current library grant construction grant program are cities, counties, and regional public libraries. There are two project types for this grant program: the improvement grant, which is a maximum award of $1 million, and the accessibility grant, which is a maximum award of $450,000. Both these require a local match of 50% for the total project, and the process for review is a competitive peer review process. Improvement projects include new construction, renovation of existing library facilities, repair of existing library facilities. Accessibility projects include mediation of physical barriers, preventing access for all, automatic doors, ADA compliant restrooms, and upgrading the lighting. In this picture, you'll see the Sandstone Public Library, which was awarded $1 million in 2020 to complete the renovation for their facility, increasing the children's space and adding meeting rooms. At this time, the library construction program has been funded 13 times, beginning in 1994 through the 2023. Appropriations range from $1 million to $4 million. There has been 170 awards made in the lifetime of this grant program. The average award is just over $100,000. The largest was $1 million in 2018 for Fergus Falls, and the smallest was $614 in 1996 for White Bear Lake. The average local match is $6.27 per state dollar spent. The last appropriation were 2.95 in October of 2020 and 4 million in May of 23. Libraries in 70 of the 87 counties have applied for and received grants. 40 projects total in the 7-county metro area and 140 projects in greater Minnesota. The fiscal year 24 library construction grants were awarded, and those awardees include the City of Belle Plaine, Calumet Public Library, City of Cass Lake, City of Cook, City of Dassel, City of Detroit Lakes, Redwood Falls Public Library, Spring Grove Public Library, City of Spring Valley, and City of Silver Bay. $4 million in grants were awarded to these 10 library construction projects from the FY24 library construction grant. In 2024, construction grants will support nearly $11 million in total project costs between the recipients. These funds were made possible through legislative bonding during the 2023 session. The 2025 recommendation is $900,000. Historically, about 17.8 in grant funds has drawn nearly $112 million in local support. Prospective cities include Duluth, Sauk Center, Brainerd, Black Duck, Crookston, Tyler, Blue Earth, Albert Lea, and St. Paul. Prospective counties include Ramsey, Nobles, Blue Earth, Washington, Wattawan, Douglas, and Anoka. And the estimated need is over $187 million statewide. Now, prospective means a city employee, county employee, or a library employee has emailed questions about whether their grant will be available in 2025. Or has expressed need to their Council of Regional Public Library Systems Administrator. Pictured above is the Howard Lake Library, awarded $729,000 for a 7,000 square foot new building. It is the state's first net zero library and utilized federal funds in addition to their local match. Over 45 public libraries across the state have identified a need for repairs, expansion, or new construction. The governor is recommending $900,000 for the Library Construction Competitive Grant Program, and this program enables public libraries receiving funding to improve access, meet ADA compliance standards by removing architectural barriers and replacing deficient facilities.
Thank you, Ms. Burnham. Senator Pappas, question.
Yeah, Assistant Commissioner Burnham, how much did this, did you get in the bonding bill in 23? I don't remember.
I believe $4
million. $4 million, yeah. It seems like we should do better than that and better than $900,000. Thanks. I mean, you really spread the money around the state a lot. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Pappas. Any other members' questions? Thank you. Thank you for coming, Assistant Commissioner and Sammy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, we've got Minnesota State Academy's Superintendent Wilding. And Nettie Peters is the translation services. And whenever you're ready, you can go ahead. Got it.
Good afternoon. My name is Terry Wilding. I am the superintendent of the Minnesota State Academies. Much smaller request than the recent ones that you've just heard, but still significant to represent a very small population in Minnesota, but a critical service that is needed. Before I proceed, some of you may have already visited our campus and may have not. Just a short overview of what our program is and what we do in the state of Minnesota.
Can you speak up just a little bit louder, or is it, see if it's on? I think I heard it, but it's, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Let's try this. Is that better?
Well, you have to hold your mouth really close to that one. I think the other one was working.
This is working?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Continue.
We have two schools, two campuses. They are both located in Faribault, Minnesota, about 1 mile apart, the blind school and the deaf school. Servicers for our students, we have students that go to both campuses, transfer back and forth, depending on their needs. The services have 50 different school districts that we serve that bring students to our facilities. We were based in 1858. We are one of the oldest schools in Minnesota. At the deaf school, we serve students from 12 months all the way up to age 22. We follow different age-appropriate curriculum, services, after-school programming, and various other supports. We develop both the bilingual aspect of English and American Sign Language, following the state standards. We also have an A-plus transition program for our older students, which is our 18 to 22-year-olds. That supports our students becoming ready to live, work, function on their own in the world after they graduate. We provide regular classroom experiences, but also activities outside the classroom for our students. At the blind school, it's quite similar. We start usually at age 5 up to age 22. We have different activities and things that are provided for access for visually impaired students who struggle for that access. We change our instructional design, we change our curriculum, we have Braille, and we focus a lot on technology for equal access and giving them the same educational experience, both inside the classroom and outside. We have Braille and orientation and mobility for our students. We have music programming and expanded core curriculum. That is a curriculum that assists students on how to navigate the world with limitations in vision. Not just book learning, but world interactions with people, how do you get around out in the community, those types of things are addressed in expanded core curriculum. Both programs provide full experiences that maybe students would not receive in a public school system. Many of our students are isolated in public school systems. As they come to our school, they finally feel belonging. They have interactions, there's no barriers, they have peers. The experience and learning in different areas, language, social, emotional, mental health, communication, all of those barriers are taken away, and they can access peers that are the same as them. It's a key point in our programming. We are a residential program. As we serve students from all over the state, they cannot commute on a daily basis. 40% of our students live on campus, and 60 live within a radius close enough to transport on a daily basis. Our experiences aren't only fun or babysitting. We provide educational activities and assistance in developing those supports, such as a tutoring center, STEM activities. We have different activities in their after-school program that develops that whole child. After three, we consider that our world classroom, and that's how we support our community. Our funding. As other agencies have mentioned, we are here, we are solely dependent on the legislature's support. We do not have another source of funding. We follow the allocation, we cannot levy, we cannot do our own bonding. Our state bonding system is our only revenue support. We appreciate your support in our operation. This year, we have three proposals. They are the same as last year with adjustment for financial inflation. Those three projects, as I recently mentioned, as the others did, is balancing asset preservation and replacement and renovation. Right now, what we're trying to do is also reduce our asset preservation funds to look at significant projects that we can change and reform our buildings to make them more efficient and reduce the need for asset preservation funds, energy costs, staffing costs. Two other projects represent that. Our first one is pre-design money for the Deaf School campus, as we have several buildings that aren't usable. The capacity of those buildings are built from the 1860s to the 1940s. So they're not designed properly to match students' population. They're not energy efficient. They're very hard to maintain. Some of those buildings really aren't in usable status. There may be one-third of the building that we can use, and others we can't maintain or can't even get accessible for our students. We're looking at how to design and replace up to six buildings on our campus. That way we can become more energy user-friendly, it will be safer for our students, and reduce the square footage. That will assist us in reducing later maintenance needs and expenses that are occurring. Our second pre-design money is at the Blind School campus. We have a therapy pool. Our Blind School students, about half of our students are in wheelchairs or have other additional disabilities. Sitting in a wheelchair all day makes it very difficult to learn. When they get into a therapy pool, it has allowed their body to stretch, and that continues their learning after they're out of the pool. The pool was built in 1950s. We have one lift chair to get one child in at a time. We've expended thousands of dollars in fixing and remodeling and renovating, that pool. At this point, it would be cheaper for us to replace it, as well as safer. What we would like to look in is a zero gravity pool in and out for our students. As we have so many severe needs, all of our students getting into the pool would be much safer, as well as our workers in that design, if we look at the zero gravity pool. This plan is to replace that pool. And lastly, our ongoing maintenance and campus. We have a beautiful campus, but it's very old. Many buildings require safety, accessibility, maintenance needs across both campuses. We have two buildings on the historical registry, and the cost of renovation is quite extensive for those two historical buildings. We're asking for 1.15 and trying to catch up with some of our demands on our campuses. I'll give you an example. We are looking at adding wheelchair lifts to our two stages on the Deaf School campus. Originally, the cost we estimated $200,000. As we proceed, it's $580,000 right now. Asset preservation doesn't go that far anymore. So we have to be careful in managing our budget to keep up with our daily student needs. Those are our three requests for today. I thank you for listening, and I thank you always for our continued support. I know you've come and visited our campus. If you want another opportunity, you're welcome to stop by at any time.
Thank you, Superintendent Wilding. And Senator Jasinski, I know you have a question, but Senator Pappas and I were just talking. We can't remember the last time that we actually visited. Do you remember when we were there? Senator Jasinski, and then your question.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't remember what year it was, but we've been there. I don't know if all the committee members have been there, but just a couple comments and not so much questions. But again, this really is a valuable need for the state of Minnesota. Many of the students here have multiple disabilities, as the Superintendent Wilding said. It's not just being deaf or blind. A lot of times it's both, or confined to a wheelchair, or many other issues. And as he said, this is the only funding source that they have. And, you know, he shows a picture of Wilkins Hall there. That was a great project that was done a few years ago, which is up to date, accessible, and all those things. But a lot of the other buildings are, as we said, from the early 1900s. Very, very historic campus. It's neighbors to Shattuck St. Mary's. I don't know, Senator Halsey, if you've been up there, but it's just a beautiful facility. And a lot of those buildings are expensive to maintain. They need to be adapted to the current needs. And it's just a really important facility here in Minnesota. And it's very valuable to Faribault as well. It's what put Faribault on the map by many means many, many years ago. I know Senator Pappas has toured it, and it's just a beautiful facility. I don't want to date myself, but the swimming pool they're referring to, I used to be a fourth grade swim on the YMCA swim team, and that's where we practiced back in then. It was a community asset that the YMCA actually used many, many times. Since then, we've added another pool, but that's where back in the day, I'm 58 years old, so it's old and it needs updating for sure. So again, they do a great job up there with their facilities they have, but it definitely needs to be maintained, and it's definitely an asset for Minnesota with all the historical buildings. I think there's only two on the register, but there's so many there that fit into the campus that it would be a shame to tear those down. They've done a good job of mothballing to some maybe future use by a neighboring or someone in the community that could maybe reuse those, but they definitely need to be updated with what's going on. So again, thank you, Superintendent Wilding, and I think members understand, if you've been there, how important this campus is, so thank you.
Thank you, Senator Jasinski. Senator Pappas.
Thank you so much, Superintendent Wilding. Could you tell me what your current enrollment is, and has it been stable, or do you have more capacity?
Thank you, Senator Pappas. During COVID, we did lose a lot of students. They moved out of state. They moved to different programs. Recently, our growth numbers have increased. We have 100 students at the Deaf School and 50 students at the Blind School. We increased 50 last year. So we've been reaching out to districts. We're increasing our services statewide. We're growing our connections with families and children all over the state to increase those numbers.
Great. Thank you, Senator Pappas.
I forgot my second question.
I think
so you can move to someone else.
I think you were going to ask what the zero gravity pool is. Zero, and it's just a slope?
Oh, okay. It's a walk-in pool. So the wheelchairs, that means you don't require a lift to get into the pool. So kids don't need to climb into the pool. We don't need to put them in a chair and put them into the water. We're changing the aspect of that. They can roll in, or with some assistance with a staff, we'll have special equipment of wheelchairs that can go into the zero level gradual pool. Does that make sense?
Thank you. Yep, like walking in the ocean. Senator Pappas.
Superintendent, can you remind me what we gave you in 2023?
In 2023, we got $2.1 million in asset preservation, and then we did the dorm project with $4.6 million. And that dorm renovation, we are in the middle of that project right now. We're renovating our dorms that we're trying to do. Instead of using asset preservation, we are in the process of renovating our four dorms. We finally just hired an architect, and we are in the design phase this week. We have used most of the AP money. We put on new roofs, new sidewalks, new AC units, and we've used up, there's probably a little bit of dollars still left, but we've used most of it.
Thank you. All right, thank you, Superintendent Wiling and Nettie Peters, for coming today. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Next up, we've got the Purpich Center for the Arts. We've got Interim Executive Director Allegra Smishek.
Smishek.
Thank you. Go ahead and start when you're ready. I think you'll get that hooked up. That's okay. All right, go ahead and state your name for the record.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm Allegra Smishek, Interim Executive Director for Purpich Center for Arts Education. I've had the honor of serving in this role since late November, and I'm joined today by my colleague, Betsy Anderson. She's our Director of Communications, and she brings a wealth of institutional knowledge. I've only been there a couple of months, but the moment I stepped into Purpich, I knew that it was home. I've worked in public education for 20 years, internationally, in Greater Minnesota, and in the metro area. And in all that time, I have never experienced a place like Purpich. If you've visited our campus, first, thank you. And you know that as you walk up the entryway steps, you're greeted by a vibrant floor-to-ceiling mural painted by our students. It's like a celebration of joy and color and creativity. Most of the time before an interview, I'm pretty nervous, but as I waited in the lobby of Purpich, I was taking in the mural and other art that students created in the space, and I swear I felt my blood pressure drop. And there's actually an emerging branch of neuroscience called neuroaesthetics that studies this kind of phenomenon, the impact of the arts on our physical and mental well-being. So as I walked by the famous Purpich lockers and student sculptures, I felt like I was having this really special, unique moment, but research would say it's a pretty common human experience. It's part of why Purpich has a different vibe than other places. Many schools today feel frenetic and stressful, but Purpich radiates a beautiful intensity. It's like this focus driven by passion and expression. During my interview, when it was my turn to ask the committee questions, I asked one of my go-tos, what are you most proud of and what would you change if you could? And our board vice chair told me that she's most proud of how many of our staff and students describe Purpich as a home and the strong sense of belonging in our community. As far as what she would change, she said, I wish every single student in the whole state of Minnesota could feel that way. And it's that sentiment of finding a home that's really at the core of our mission at Purpich. Many of you are familiar with our Arts High School in Golden Valley, serving 153 11th and 12th grade students from across the state. Our students hail from every congressional district and 54 of Minnesota's 67 Senate districts. We have a pretty even geographic split, with nearly half of our students coming from Greater Minnesota. Beyond our high school, our professional development and resource programs has an even greater impact and reach. We're very proud to support educators and administrators in every Senate district in Minnesota. And like you, we believe in collecting high quality, relevant data to inform our decisions. That's why we've given each of you a personalized summary of how Purpich has served your constituents over the past biennium. The number of educators from the districts you represent that Purpich has served directly, the learning events or cohorts they participated in, and their feedback on those experiences. You see, the art or music teacher is often the only one in their subject area at their school, and sometimes in their entire school district. This isolation is compounded by the fact that much of the professional development they receive is targeted toward general classroom teachers. Purpich bridges this gap through our professional development and resource programs, as well as our statewide resource library, providing space for collaboration and high-quality resources that directly support arts educators. And to continue providing these services, we really need to address some high-priority capital projects. Acknowledging the most recent budget forecast, we requested $4 million in asset preservation funds to address about half of our current needs. We're really grateful for the governor's recommendation of $1.5 million for this biennium, because it'll allow us to address our three most urgent projects: our Gaia building roof replacement and exterior repairs, drainage repair and resurfacing of our loading dock, and updating our energy management system. The Gaia building, which houses our professional development and resource programs, requires urgent roof replacement to the, and additionally, its exterior concrete panels that you can see there. The original cost estimates were $900,000, but unfortunately, that estimate no longer is sufficient due to rising costs. We've also learned that replacing the HVAC system at the same time as the roof replacement is by far the most cost-effective long-term option. Last year, we resurfaced some of our parking lots at Purpich, which was great. Thank you for that. But our loading dock area has a drainage issue that we have to address before we can resurface that area. So once those mitigation measures are in place, we can get it resurfaced to prevent any further damage. Our main building was built in the early 1960s, so not quite as old as our friends in Faribault, but still nearly, well, probably over 60 years. So our automation system is really outdated. We plan to install new IP-based controllers for the air handling units, central heating loop, and unit heaters. These upgrades will modernize our infrastructure and improve our energy efficiency. These three projects are critical to maintain the infrastructure that supports our students and arts educators across Minnesota. And I know that we often describe the impact of the arts as something money can't buy, but it's really important to recognize that the arts do, in fact, generate significant economic benefits for Minnesotans. The creative sector contributes billions to our state's economy, providing jobs, tourism, and community engagement. So when you invest in the arts, you are investing in Minnesota's cultural and economic vitality. But more importantly, we're asking you to invest in the students and educators who bring our communities to life. Our students leave Purpich prepared to be creative problem solvers, whether they pursue careers in the arts, education, technology, or beyond. Madam Chair and committee members, I urge you to support our funding request so that we can continue fostering a space where students and educators from across the state feel at home, a place where they can thrive, create, and contribute to our shared future. Thank you for your consideration, and we welcome your questions.
Thank you, Ms. Mishek. And thank you for providing this, many-page document for each of our specific districts. I'm going to keep this on hand because it's pretty interesting to see all of the teachers and students that it affects in the schools in my district. I'm probably going to ask what Senator Pappas is going to ask, but do you know what we did in 2023?
So in 2023, we received $891,000, and that was towards the roof replacement project, but the costs have exceeded that amount, unfortunately. And the HVAC system would just be too practical to pass up, if possible.
Thank you. Members, any questions? Senator Pappas.
Director Smisak, could you explain that a little more so you weren't able to use the money to replace the roof? And that's on your request again?
Correct.
Okay, so you have that, though, in the bank.
Correct.
You just need a little bit more money then to do it. So you have on your sheet $826,000.
Correct. That is in addition to the original $891,000.
It doubled in price?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And we have started,
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Madam Chair. Betsy Anderson. We have started that process. We have been working with the contractors for probably since we got the money initially, just haven't been able to start the project yet because of the funding.
Yeah, I think thank you, Madam Chair. I think we need to have a little more conversation about that, maybe offline, to understand that process a little bit more.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Senator Dibble. Mm-hmm.
Thanks. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to get clear on what I thought I heard, some numbers. Perpich was prepared to come forward with a $4 million ask, which represented only half of $8 million in identified needs, and the governor's recommendation was $1.5 million.
Correct.
Did I hear that correctly?
Yes.
All right. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I just wanted to understand a little better the Gaia building. It says roof and HVAC, but in the narrative they're talking about the precast concrete panels. Is those the panels on the side? Are they insecure? Is that a problem? Are they falling off? Are they hitting people on the head?
Not yet.
We hope to avoid that. But it's a little hard to see on the image, but there is some significant cracking in those exterior panels. So that's why they've risen to a high priority item.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, and also wanted, Madam Chair, say thank you for the report. Thought I had a lot of support in my district for the Perpich Center. Now I know I do, so thank you. I hear a lot about it. Thanks.
Same. Thank you, Senator Dibble. Senator Johnson-Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your work. I actually have several colleagues who work at Perpich. I have lots of experience with children who go there, and I know the good work you do and the lives you literally save and take just great responsibility in helping those students find their way when they have not been able to find their way at other schools. So I have heard so many personal stories from my daughter's friends and from my friends who are on your staff, and actually we're trying to set up a meeting with me to come over and see some of your projects, so I would look forward to that. But I just wanted to thank you for your time, but also your commitment to these students who really, without Perpich, I don't know where they would receive the kind of care and instruction that they're provided with. So thank you.
Thank you.
That's all.
Thank you. All right, thank you so much for coming today, Perpich Center for the Arts. And with that, members, if there's no further business, we will not be meeting on Thursday, but we'll be meeting next Tuesday. Committee is adjourned.